ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय especially meant for the Asuras. The word Asuri, Asura refers to those who are interested in sense gratification, specifically in sex life, to which they're overly attracted. Thus Puranjan, the living entity, enjoys himself to his greatest satisfaction by means of the genitals. Consequently, he used to go to the place known as Gramaka. Material sense gratification is also called Gramya, or the place where sex life is indulged in. To a great extent is called Gramaka. When going to Gramaka, Puranman used to be accompanied by his friend Durmada. The word Vitsaya refers to the four bodily necessities of life: eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. The word Durmadena may be analyzed in this way. Dur means dusta, or sinful, and mada means madness. Every living entity who is in contact with material nature is called mada, or mad. It is said, Pichasi payayina mati chanahaya maya grista jigravaya se bhava udaya prema divarti. When a person is haunted, he becomes practically insane. When one is in an insane condition, he speaks all kinds of nonsense. Thus, to become engaged in sense gratification, one has to accept a friend who is durmada, or badly affected by a material disease. The word asuri nama pasichadvaha are significant in another sense. The sunrise is first visible from the eastern side, the Bay of Bengal, and gradually progresses towards the west. It is practically experienced that people in the west are more addicted to sense gratification. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is certified paschimera loka savamuda anachara. Chaitanya Charitamrita 1089. The more one goes to the western side, the more you'll find people disinterested in spiritual life. You will find them behaving against the Vedic standards. Because of this, people living in the west are more addicted to sense gratification. In this Bhagavatam, it is confirmed that Surinama Paschitva, in other words, the population on the western side, is interested in an Asuric civilization. That is a materialistic way of life. Lord Chaitanya consequently wanted this Krishna conscious movement to be placed on the western side of the world, so that people addicted to sense gratification might be benedicted by his teachings. Om Ajnana Timuran Yasya Genanda Sakya Shakshurun Nitambira Tasmai Sri Gurudeva Sri Chaitanya Dastam Sakitam Nenu Tule Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So here we are in the story that Narada Muni told to King Pachimavati. And in that story, he is speaking about Puranjan, who lives in a city of 9 gates. Now, the body is a city of 9 gates. And it is described how Puranjan resided within that city, and how he's trying to enjoy the senses. These senses are described as various gates. The 9 holes in the body are the 9 gates, and through these 9 gates we are interacting with the material world. So that comes out. We're seeing how the living entity in the body then is able to interact with the material energy all through these 9 gates. Then it said that, so Maharaj Puranjan, the king, would go to the gates, through different gates. In the last few days, the ears were discussed, and it was said that the left ear is meant for hearing higher sound vibration, the right ear for hearing lower sound vibration. And we saw that as the king went out to that gate, that he was accompanied by his friend Sutadhar. So Sutadhar is basically means to contain what has been heard, to remember, in other words, what has been heard. So Shutadhar is there. So if we hear rubbish, then we'll remember rubbish. And if we hear positive sound vibration, we'll remember positive sound vibration. We could also discuss politics. Here this morning, instead of Bhagavatam, we could just have a good time discussing some politics. We could either focus on international politics and talk about Trump, or we could discuss Indian politics and Modi and everything, or BJP, the real agenda of the BJP. The real agenda. Which, it's not what you think it is. Really. inside story.
So like this, or we could go Australian
politics, and yeah, and in this way we could spend the rest of the day. Some might get very interested, and we would remember it also. But what would it lead to? Nothing. Nothing. Because that's just based on material ambition. And it's that material ambition is like you throw a stone in the water and it makes rings. And these rings spread wider and wider until they disappear. So material ambition is like that, like rings spreading until they disappear into nothing. That's actually a metaphor from Shakespeare, who dealt with ambition. Anyway, today we are discussing a gate on the western side, particularly involved with for sexual activity, that gate. So that gate is known as Asuri. So it's already a name that hints of the problems that can arise with sexuality. That it can take us away from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is said when one goes to that gate, one is accompanied by Durmada. And Durmada, Srila Prabhupada explains it, Mada being mad, Dur, Mada. It is also in the Sanskrit dictionary further defined as drunken, being intoxicated. So it also has an intoxicating side. Intoxication makes one forget somehow or other. This is like forget where we are, forget what we're doing. So that's a problem with intoxication, that it takes us away from actual situation that we're in. And that's why you see all these, when you're driving, you know, testing for drugs or testing for alcohol, because drunken driving is dangerous, because we are somewhere else. So not only is drunken driving dangerous, but when we get drunk, intoxicated by sense gratification, then also we are in danger, because we forget. We are enjoying embracing, and we are enjoying kissing so much that we forget everything. We forget just simply time. We forget actually, what am I doing with my life? What's happening here? What? And it's like, this is the real thing. This is real life, not real life. It's a part of life. But not that now this is real life. That's an intoxicated state, a drunk state. Really, this is real life. This is it. No, it's part of life, but it's not all it is. Everything is there. Happiness, distress, health, disease, old age, death, it's all there. It is all part of life. And we were enjoying so much, and now suddenly we have a funeral. Oh my God, how did this happen? Oh, what a disaster. No, that's part of the script. It's already there. We're not surprised. How could this suddenly happen? It didn't happen suddenly. It was expected all along, because it was part of the basic arrangement. Therefore, in a sober state of mind, not in an intoxicated state of mind, in a sober state of mind, we are aware of all these aspects, and that this is part of reality, and we are prepared. It is just like anything, if you are prepared, it really goes a lot easier. It's like if you have to cook the Sunday feast, it's good to have a menu before, and it's good to do the shopping before. Not that you make the menu while you're cooking and then send people to quickly buy things that are not available. That is chaos. Is there? Anyway, that's chaos. So, therefore, people in material life are all becoming infatuated, which is another word for intoxicated, and as a result, forgetful of the reality of life. Srimad Bhagavatam is bringing us that reality of life. In Vedic scriptures, death is not hidden as a topic, although it's an unpleasant topic in the eyes of many, but it is not hidden, it is discussed. Especially in the Western world, it's a taboo topic. We don't talk about that until it happens. I mean, you try to act as if it doesn't exist. But this is, this looks a really smart approach. Why talk about misery? Hey, let's talk about fun and nothing unpleasant. Yes? But then when the unpleasant comes, then it hits your heart. Whereas if you have thought about it before, well, then you can deal with it better. Logically, yes. Therefore, in transcendental knowledge, we are aware of this. So, therefore, everything has a place. Everything has a place. It is natural that when we get of a certain age, that boys are attracted to girls and girls attracted to boys. That is nature. That's not something that we deny. Not something that is taboo. No. It is something, it is part of society, but how are we going to deal with this attraction? If there is just, if we're just acting in relationships without any, without anything else, then what is the result of such relationships? They're not beneficial. Therefore, in practically all civilizations of the world, the institution of marriage is found. And marriage, then, is a life of commitment. It is a long-term thing. It is about not only about short-term enjoyment, but it is also dealing with the result, children, bringing up children, and in this way, building a whole life. That's another thing. So, and there we can, there sexuality can have its place, but at the same time, it cannot be the first priority in life. There are more important things than sex. In the modern Western world, if you say that, not everyone would agree with that. Yeah, a lot of people say, "Well, you know, I think it's the best thing there is in the world. It's the best there is." And then you also, there are people who are acting in that way, plenty, because now also transcendental knowledge gets lost, and the Asuri Bhav, and the demoniac consciousness is also now coming to the forefront. Ishwaraham aham bhogi. I am the controller. I am the enjoyer. And that is the purpose of life. Enjoy as much as you can. And we are tired of that dry philosophy. We also want to enjoy now, like everyone else in America.
Yes. So that is, so India has come to that also very much, and that's why practically every Indian has some relatives in America.
I tell you, if you don't have relatives in America, you are not Indian.
That's the situation. Yes. You have to, and you have to visit them also.
Help him if you can.
Oh, I see. Yes. Well, so in this way, we have an embassy in the West. Now here, Bhagavatam, we find a description. Srila Prabhupada explains, just like the sun is rising in the east, and then moves towards the west, and there the sun sets. So the sun represents light, represents knowledge, and darkness represents ignorance. So when the sun sets in the Western world, it is the domain of ignorance, the domain of forgetfulness. Just no knowledge. Just never thought about these things. Right? And there we see. And here we are. In Australia. So, of course, you say, yeah, but like Australia, actually, from India, is southeast. It's not west. No, it is west. It's like it begins, east is in India, and then you go around. So Japan and China is west, it's far west. That's the far west, that's not the far east. It's the far west, we put from the sun's perspective. The sun starts in India and goes around the world and then comes all the way around. So Australia is far west. Big ignorance, if you didn't notice. And it is true that these things are there. These things are happening. That the most of material nature are manifest because the different countries in the world did not just come about by some historical development, by some historical evolution. Once upon a time, there were people. They settled in the Gangetic Plain. And there they developed a culture, and some say the Aryans came in from somewhere else, and they mixed with the Dravidians, and others say, no, this is rubbish, and because now we have archaeological evidence to prove that actually Indian culture is much older. We have discovered the Indus Valley and there's ancient civilizations, so this whole theory that the Aryans came from somewhere else is false. Anyway, all those kind of theories are basically indicating that a culture gradually developed. And then in Europe you had the Germanic tribes, and these Germanic tribes, they gradually developed and they mixed with some other tribes, the Celtic tribes, and who came from Ireland, and then you got the British, a mixture of Germanic and Celtic tribes, and then on the other side you had the Germans and the Dutch and the Belgians, and they were like pure Germanic, right? Blue eyes, blonde hair, whole thing. So like this, the whole world is divided up, and we think everything has sort of historically gradually developed. That is rubbish. And you learn such rubbish in school. See, not everything you learn in school is true. It's a shock. Not everything you learn on the internet is true. Not everything you Google is true. No, really. I mean, sometimes Google is wrong. Yeah. So these things are difficult to digest. It's kind of shocking. Okay?
Sometimes Google is wrong. Oh my God.
Oh my God. That's terrible. Yes. So, just that you know. Anyhow,
we are, the fact is that actually the different cultures in the different countries of the world are coming about inspired by Krishna. That they are simply already there as facilities for different souls with a different kind of mentality. So India is supposed to be Punya Bhumi. Of course, now it is Kali Yuga Punya Bhumi. So it's still Punya, it's still like the Punya is still there, but everything is ulta, upside down. It's like when Mickey Mouse came for the first time to India, he was received in Delhi on the airport. Mickey came by plane, big Mickey costume, and Mickey was in India. And how was he received? With puja. They offer arati. In Bengal, we see processions with look just like deity processions. And people, little girls walk in front and they carry a plate and they have like a little flame on the plate, right? And there's a whole row of them, right? And walking like this, and behind there is a chariot and it's nicely decorated with flower garlands, and on there is a picture of Karl Marx. Because it's Bengal, the communist state. So like this, it's interesting how it is still Punya Bhumi, even but Kali Yuga Punya Bhumi. It is all Kitchery, is all getting mixed up. That's the situation, and no one that knows what they do. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of the marriage party, and there's a mother, and she's making arrangements for the marriage of her daughter, and everything, she's checking, everything is there, and everything is fine. Then, just last minute before, it's all supposed to start, suddenly there's a black cat in the middle of the Yakishama, a black cat, and even that's not auspicious, black cat. So, what to do? Anyway, it was too late, so she just, there was an empty flower basket, she just took the flower basket, put it on top of the black cat. And, fortunately, during the whole marriage, that cat was quiet. It didn't meow. Imagine it would meow. Everyone would have been shocked. There was nothing. So everything went well. 30 years later now, the daughter herself was, arranging a marriage for her daughter. So, checklist, we got this, we got this, the other thing, everything is there. And then, oh my god, what's wrong, we forgot one thing, what is it? Yeah. We need a black cat. It's like, so. Since then, in every Indian marriage, there is a black cat. And India is full of black cats. And everyone's doing,
this is how it is supposed to be done.
Like that. But nobody knows why. And then the children ask, why? That you cannot ask. That's offensive. You cannot ask. And so, Kali Chora went in Punya Bhumi. In this way, Kali Yuga is effectively influencing Kali Yuga, influencing Punya Bhumi. And Srila Prabhupada said, when the British came to India and they started industrialization and they started the railway lines, and it said the first thing that happened is that all the intellectual class, they worked for the British. And they became well paid in the British system, government. It said, and the villages emptied out, and all the quality people, the higher caste people, they all moved out. And they all start working for the British. He said, and the more lower caste people remained in the villages. And the standard of life went down. Okay. Like that. So, showing the degradation of how it happened. But India is meant to be a place for pious souls. Therefore, dry grass. Easy to catch fire. You just a little bit about Krishna and the people. Yes. The West, it takes a little longer.
Krishna? Huh? What?
What's that? Soul? You know, who's got? Is that a kind of music? Why? It's all like far away spiritual culture, not so innocent. So that is there, but the Sankirtan movement changes everything. The Sankirtan movement is so potent that it doesn't matter where anyone comes from. Immediately he is lifted up to the topmost platform. He's going beyond ritual. Whereas mostly in spiritual culture, people are steeped in ritual. The Sankirtan movement takes us beyond ritual. Suddenly, spirituality with taste and with knowledge. Those are two things that in India are not always there.
Sansara sagale yamna mrikya chara.
Very dry. Dry. Very dry. But we have to sit there because it is a religious ritual. So your mother wants you to do it. You have to go. You're obliged. So you sit there and listen to this lecture. It's just like, no juice. But this Vaishnav teachings from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, full of juice. Because if you hear the Upanishads, that's a little dry. Everything in this world, actually all this gratification is simply illusion. The illusory energy is making us believe that actually sense enjoyment is the purpose of life. But if you really are observing the matter through start to transcend temporal knowledge, then it's hard to stay awake. But Krishna is interesting. Krishna, he steals. He does. Oh yes, and they do everything to stop him. Oh, there are pots with butter and yogurt hanging off the ceiling so that they can't get to it. But they're smart, these boys. They make a human tower. And Krishna said, but this time we got him because we hung bells on the pots. And Krishna is standing on top of the human tower and says, oh, bells, please don't ring. Bells agree. Krishna takes the pot. The bells cooperate, they don't ring. Then Krishna breaks the pot and distributes it to his friends. And as they start eating, the bells start ringing like anything. And Krishna is saying, bells, what are you doing? This is like, well, you know, you're eating. We're supposed to ring when you're eating. In this way, yes, when Krishna eats, bells are ringing. What to do? So there's some juice there. There's some fun there. There's some. It's not so dry like Upanishads. In this way, the Sankirtan movement is based on taste. Taste supported by transcendental knowledge, but not just dry knowledge. And kirtan, full of rats. Yes. So in this way, there's all kinds of tastes, yes. Before I was involved in Krishna consciousness, I was searching a little bit for something spiritual. So one day, I went to a Buddhist monastery. Okay, and it was a place, it was a tower, big tower, with water around it, and a bridge. And they let you in at night, and at 7 o'clock at night, they come in, at 8 o'clock they pulled up the bridge, and they wouldn't let it down till 10 o'clock the next day. You were in. Anyway, I thought, I can swim. So I'll take the risk, so I went. And I stayed the night, I had to get up at 4 o'clock, it was okay. Then we had to sit down and chant some mantras, and then do some pranayama, you know, breathe in, breathe out. Okay, I could do that. It wasn't too bad. But then, after the whole session, it was time for breakfast. And at breakfast, they served a piece of bread this big with some salty soy paste, something like, what do you call this Australian stuff? Vegemite, right? Something like Vegemite, you know. And, you know, you've got to be born into it to appreciate it. So, they served that for breakfast. So I was looking at the breakfast. First of all, when I looked at the size of the bread, I knew this is not going to do it. I mean, this is not going to work. I'm going to be hungry. Right? So, and then I looked at it. And then I looked at what was on top. And I go, that's not going to do it either. You know, that's not. So, I wasn't convinced by the breakfast. And then I started to philosophically think about the breakfast. I was thinking, why? Why do they have to serve a breakfast like this? And why this process of self-denial? Why does spirituality have to be a process of self-denial? Why does it have to be unnatural? I said, no. I think that's not the path. I think the path has to be that one's nature is engaged. And so, I was the first one waiting for the bridge. 9:45, I was standing at the bridge, you know. And I couldn't wait for that bridge to go down. I said, I want to get out of here and eat something. Had a real breakfast, and I did. As soon as I was out there, got something more to eat, my God. Now, Krishna consciousness is not unnatural. We do recognize that there is a pure nature and an impure nature. We do recognize that part of our nature has become intoxicated by the material energy, and therefore that we have to overcome some habits that have formed. Intoxication means you get a habit. We know. Drugs, it becomes a habit, and then you have a problem. Drug problem, alcohol, habit, bottles hidden everywhere. No one watching. Chewing peppermint so they won't smell, but we can see it. Here's Dr. G again. You have to be quiet. Yes. It says smoking also, so we can go with all this if you want to in detail. Why, is there anyone smoking here? Huh? What's that? Flower instead of smoking, yes. And now the new thing is this vaping stuff, right? No more smoking, vaping. And now they find out that this vaping causes a type of lung cancer which is so aggressive they can't treat it. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. It was the new thing, you know, not so bad. Some of the old people start vaping everywhere. And now that is a problem. Mm. More vicious than what was there before.
So anyway, this is all due to intoxication, bad habits. So we have to break them when we come to Krishna consciousness. So that's maybe a little bit unnatural, but then it becomes... but not that we have to stop using our senses. We have a tongue. And kids like to show their tongue. It's a well-known thing. Yes. But the tongue is not only for showing. You know, we want something on the tongue as well. Something tasty. Not a dry piece of bread with Vegemite. Sorry. Unless, you know, I guess when you're Aussie, you accept Vegemite's okay. Is it vegetarian?
Yes, Vegemite, vegetable.
Vegemite's vegetarian. Okay. Good on you. I never tried it.
I don't really like it, and the way
it looks doesn't look nice, something I would want to eat. Anyway, it also has to look nice, and, yeah, it doesn't just you have that fruit, what's it called, to do or something.
Duran,
which you have to get past your nose, right? And they say it tastes really, really good, but it stinks like hell. They say you have to get it past your nose. This is all in the mode of ignorance, right? This is like obviously undesirable, but it's sort of exciting, you know? It stinks so much, but at that taste, you have to taste it. I never tasted it, forget it. It's the mode of ignorance. So we have to overcome lower modes, that's there. But then it's full of taste, full of experience, positive experience. That is Krishna consciousness. Therefore, it is the ripened fruit of Vedic knowledge, this bhakti. Therefore, it is the top. The other day we were discussing Astanga Yoga. And in Astanga Yoga we are performing various disciplines, including asana, pranayama, dhyana, and so on. And we are performing these with the purpose of controlling the mind and senses. So once that's done, what do you do next? What do you do next? Then you use the senses, the mind and senses, in the best possible way. That's where bhakti comes in. Because then you do things with devotion. When you do something with devotion, then you give it your very best. So we can see that bhakti is naturally the crown of yoga. That it is naturally what you do after you've completed your Astanga Yoga, then you naturally come to bhakti. You naturally start doing things with devotion. You do the best you can. And then, devotion for who? It's like in Sydney, near the temple, there's this park and there's this memorial. And on the memorial it says, the greatest thing a man can do is give his life for his country. And I go like, well... And no. I mean, if the war starts, I probably go somewhere else and come back when it's over. That's probably what I will do. If I can. If I can, I'll get out. I'm not going to join the army, join the navy, join the sea. Not me. I'm getting out of there quick before hell breaks loose. So, because that doesn't look like the greatest thing to me, to sacrifice my life for my country. To me, the greatest thing looks to give my life to Krishna. So that's it. So devotion to what? That is the next question. Devotion to Krishna. And that is what?
Bhakti is not devotion. It's devotion to Krishna. Devotion of service to Krishna. That is bhakti. But that is the natural a natural evolution when you go through yoga, is that you come to bhakti. It makes sense. So that is why we've come here, through a natural evolution. So in this way, this place, being part of the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and being dedicated to bhakti, is therefore better than Punyabhumi. It is better than Punyabhumi. Because this is transcendental bhumi, this is adhyatmic bhumi, this is Vrindavan. This is Vrindavan. As simple as that. Vrindavan is here. Wherever the deities are, there's Vrindavan. Wherever the Lord is being worshipped, Naham Tisthane Vaikunthe, I'm not residing in Vaikuntha, the Lord said. I'm residing there. Mat Gayanti Mat Bhakta, where my devotees are chanting my glories. That's where I reside. That's here. That's here. So it's here, Vrindavan. Did you know that? This is part of Vrindavan. Okay, quick pass now. Any question? Any comment?
Martin, you have
another thing? I'm here, yes.
Yesterday, the same thing you
I did the same thing. Same class that you did.
I'm just trying to contrast the point. Like you're describing how when you were there, Burjan Prabhu had taken you to Govardhan Hill and said, I've seen Shah. And you're emphasizing that going to the holy town is important.
Uh-huh.
And now the same point is coming, that this is Vrindavan. We keep hearing that wherever.
Yeah.
So is there, so this place could be Vrindavan? Is there a special, again, mercy going to the holy town, actual Vrindavan? Is there a different shift?
If we have the eyes to see, if we have the eyes to see, then we can see that this Vrindavan and that Vrindavan is non-different. But who can see? Just like Lord Brahma, he heard Bhagavatam in Chatusloki, in four slokas. But when we hear these Chatusloki, we don't get the same realization as Brahma. We need to read 18,000 to get it. That's the situation. So, yes, there's no difference between the Vrindavan here, the Vrindavan there. But when we go there, there's more manifest, more visible to us. There are many, many devotees, and these devotees are all maintaining different places where Krishna performed his pastimes. We can see devotees have built many temples, many ghats, many kundas, so many places are there. And the devotees are all maintaining these places for other devotees. In this way, they're serving other devotees who can go there and more easily remember Krishna. Then, of course, When the final dissolution comes, then Melbourne will be no more, and this temple will also be no more. And, but Vrindavan will still be there. Then this Vrindavan and that Vrindavan will just be the same, and will merge. So Holy Dham is always eternal. Therefore, going to the Holy Dham is not an ordinary thing. It is a neglected thing. I am here particularly coming as an ambassador of the Holy Dham because I joined Krishna consciousness in Vrindavan. And that means something. So I'm a Vrindavan devotee. You know, you have like Sankirtan devotee named book distribution. I'm also a Sankirtan devotee. I still sell sets of Bhagavatam today. For in case last night we had a program, I offered
says the Bhagavatam, I said, I will sign the set of Bhagavatam and I'll bless your baby as well. So, you know, you can still get a set of Bhagavatam from me today. And I also have a book about Vrindavan, which I'll sell after the class outside. But the point is, we need the maximum mercy. Vrindavan is one of the five principal limbs of bhakti. There are 64 limbs of bhakti. These 64 limbs help us to cultivate love of God. Five of them are the most important, including Mathuravas, residing in the Dham. Then Mahatma has a whole alphabet that we went through the other day. Remember A, B, C, D, and E, we solved it also. She solved it very expertly.
And you do
the... What?
And you do...
Yeah, what was A? What was A, B, C, D, quickly? A?
A is the association. B is Bhagavatam and B is Gobadu.
And C?
C is chanting.
Chanting.
Holy name.
D?
D is deity worship.
Deity worship.
And E is entering
the holy name. So, these are the five principal limbs of bhakti. So, Vrindavan should be there, Mayapur is saying. Very much part of our life. Prabhupada organized a festival there, and he said the devotees should go there once a year and attend the festival. Prabhupada said they should come once a year because they, in the Western world, one picks up some contamination and then they become purified in Vrindavan. And again, revitalized in their spiritual life. So it's a place for spiritual nourishment and rejuvenation. You must go to Vrindavan. It's one of them. When any of these five principal limbs of bhakti are a little bit performed, one very quickly develops love of God. If I'm here today for sitting like this as a sannyasi, it's especially from what I got from the Dhams. Somehow or another. You know, everyone has a story to tell. Well, my story is, it's through the Dham that I became like this. If you would have seen me before the Dham, we don't talk about that.
Following the question then, how much do those five elements...
How much?
How significant are those five primary practices to our preaching in the West?
Very essential. Very important. These five principal limbs are very important. We see that Srila Prabhupada built the morning program around these five, basically. Yes? Wow. And... why did he always chant Jaya Ram Madhava Kunjabi Hari? That song completely invokes the presence of Vrindavan. Every day, Bhagavatam, Kirtan is there, Japa, plenty of chanting, gorgeous deity worship. Where do you see such deity worship as in these temples? They tell you in some temple, you know, in our temple, every Ekadasi we are changing the dress of the deity, and we are going, oh, only on Ekadasi? Yeah. So, where do you see such a standard? Where do you see this? Some temples, you know, the door opens. Old pujari and a gamsha goes in quickly. Finish. Puja hobya. So these five are important. Are you satisfied? You're looking at me, yeah? Both? She's looking.
Slightly confused. I mean, from what I'm getting at is that we are trying to create the Vrindavan atmosphere here. It is definitely Vrindavan in that sense.
Yes.
But the Holy Dham is the Holy Dham because of the amount of deity worship that is being done.
No,
being
not because of the amount of deity worship that's being done, because it is the eternal spiritual Dham that is eternally manifest. That's why.
It's no difference between Golok Vrindavan, Boma Vrindavan, it is eternally manifest.
So that doesn't answer the question why we keep calling such places also Vrindavan.
Because the deity, when the deity comes, the deity brings Vrindavan with it. See, when we travel, we also bring some luggage. We bring a suitcase. No? 20 kilos. We buy some extra kilos. So when Krishna leaves Golok, he also wants to take something. But because he's Krishna, he takes everything. So wherever Krishna appears, the spiritual world also appears with him. All right, think about that. Now the other question, these five limbs are essential in how we present our Krishna consciousness. It's, those are the main nourishing things. And other things are also supporting. If you look at the 64 limbs of bhakti, I'm sorry, I cannot memorize 64 things and rattle them off like that. My memory is not that powerful. But I can give some. There are many that are relating to the deity. That one should offer seasonal fruits to the deity. Okay? One should not chastise someone in front of the deity. One should not be angry in front of the deity. One should not cry about some material misery in front of the deity. So these are some things. So if there's a procession of the deity, one must follow that procession. So there are many injunctions amongst the 64 limbs which are given. But even if we don't follow all these others, but the five are like the most important. They are really the most. So we should definitely present these five limbs in to the public when we present Krishna consciousness. And then the more finer details also, but that follows. That follows. So the five are in the front. They're the priority. And the other limbs, they follow.
We were talking about the five limbs the other day. And I also belong to Vidvasi. So that's why I'm your assistant. I want, because you are Vidvasi, and I was born in Vidvasi.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to follow your instructions exactly. Now, we talk of five things. Six is F. F means prasadam. Everybody knows. No.
He's just the whole alphabet.
My
the alphabet is too long now. You have to get to the point.
I won't talk about F.
Don't do the whole alphabet. It's a separate lecture.
While you were doing lecture, I was thinking of the words. Ye yatha maam prapadante tamere dham. So the only comments about it. Ye yatha maam prapadante tamere dham.
Yeah, he says, as you surrender unto me, I reward you accordingly. So that's clear. And then we see that the gopis, they acted so extraordinary that Krishna says, there's nothing in my possession that I can offer. Naparaya. So, and we are following in the footsteps of the gopis. So we go beyond yeyatamam prapadante. We try to offer everything to Krishna. Everything. And then you are in Vrindavan. And only then. Because actually one cannot really be born in Vrindavan. One can only attain Vrindavan through pure devotional service. Okay, so if anyone wants to meet me outside to get some Bhagavatam or some books, I'll be there. I have books about Vrindavan actually. Pleasure. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam.